cutting metal, CFLs in the kids' room, and water-saving flush valves up next.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, a podcast for handy guys from handy guys. Here are the handy guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
Okay, Brian, so I want to talk about one of the materials that a handy guy often has to work with.
What's that?
And that's metal.
Metalworking. Okay.
So I'm not talking about building something out of metal. You know,
like we're sculpting.
Right out of metal shop. Yeah. Or anything fancy. I'm just talking about a handy guy activity that you may come across. And I'll give you an example of one that I had to do recently. And I want to talk about the best tools for cutting metal.
Okay.
And there's a lot of different options.
Well, it's going to depend what the metal is.
Exactly.
You know, how decent of a cut you need, how quickly you want to cut. And, you know, that'll dictate what tool you use.
If you have a question about any tool or activity around the house for the handy guy, make sure you email us at us@handyguyspodcast.com. Go to our website. You can fill out our contact form if you prefer. And you can also tweet us.
You can tweet us. You can send us a question on Facebook. You can call us. Our phone number's on our contact page. And leave a message and we may use your voice on the air.
Got a project on your honey-do list? Let the handy guys know about it, and they may talk about it on their next podcast.
Okay, Brian, so here, let me give you the example.
Okay.
Because I don't know that we've ever actually talked about cutting metal in a previous podcast.
I don't think we have.
So when I was engaged in this activity, I just went ahead and did it. But then, you know, I thought 10 years ago, maybe, or maybe when I was a new homeowner, I would have thought, or maybe, perhaps I would have used a different tool than I ended up using this time. It may have been a more difficult job. This, for now that I'm an experienced handy guy, sometimes things actually come easy. So we'll talk about it. Here's what happened.
Okay, tell me the story, Paul.
The closet doors, my daughter has bifold.
Right, right.
By the way, I also have another dilemma for a handy guy in my daughter's room, which we may talk about next, but we'll get there. The closet door is just got, you know how it goes on those tracks, has a metal track. It's a 48-inch opening.
Right,
it's got
right.
two bifolds.
Right.
And for whatever reason, it just pulled right out of the track and it just mangled it. It bent it.
The track got bent.
The piece got ripped right out. And so,
the track actually got pulled out of the ceiling
It didn't get pulled out of the wall, out of the frame, but it was just all bent and mangled. And I just figured I'd put a whole new piece on so that the door doesn't come out again.
Can you buy that piece by itself?
Yes, you can. Get this, though.
Yeah.
You go to the home center, and I figured, I'll go where the doors are.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong
makes
answer.
Sense.
Yeah, makes sense, doesn't it? They have all the bifolds and everything else. Do they have parts for them? No. You got to go to hardware. I figured it out. There was no one around me to help me because there was one person indoors and he was helping another customer. So I walked around. I thought,
so back where they've got
parts.
The angle iron and all that kind of stuff. They
exactly.
Got it over in that section.
That's where I went.
Okay.
But I went to the doors first, looked all around. I figured they'd have some of those bifold parts somewhere around the doors, but they didn't. So I found it in hardware. They had a nice kit, actually, that had not only the 48-inch track,
mm-hmm.
but they also had
New rollers and new little
they
feet.
Had the new guide, the roller guide. They had the new feet. They had actually the hinges for your bifold. I don't know why. If you ripped one of the hinges out, you could put new hinges, and they had the handles, I think, as well.
Okay.
Anyway, so I bought
the
whole kit.
Well, that's if you buy maybe you go
just
and buy a slab door,
yeah,
right? And you want to make it a bifold.
Yep.
You get that kit, and it's got everything you need.
Exactly. So there you go. Of course, that would be a pain to put all the anyway, so there you have all the parts. You have more than you need. And I get back and I go to put the rail in, and I realize that I guess her opening is 47 inches or something like that, and it won't fit. So I need to cut off a half inch or an inch of the track. And it's a pretty solid piece of metal. It's I don't know if it's aluminum.
It's aluminum, probably.
Yeah, but it's pretty solid. It's not the real flimsy stuff. So I go to the garage. What are my choices to safely, and what are my procedure to safely cut the track, the metal track, for my doors?
Well, the first choice would be, and oxyacetylene cutting torch.
There we go. Well, I was going to pull that out, but
I would first reach for a hacksaw.
And that's what I was going to do, but it's actually, it's a pretty thick metal on that.
It wasn't going to be
as easy.
Especially if
you
have a vise or something to clamp it with. Then
the problem
it
is you want to vise it. You want to put it in the vise in a certain way without bending it because it's a.
That's right. You don't want to crush it. You don't want to bend it. You don't want to mar it up because it's painted.
Because it could take a while to do that just to get it ready for your hacksaw. I mean, you should clamp it no matter what tool you use. But
okay.
But the hacksaw wasn't going to go through it as easy as you might think.
No. You could use a cutoff wheel, pneumatic cutoff wheel, air-powered cutoff wheel.
Like one of those angle grinders with a cutoff wheel on it or one of those roto tools or something like that?
Yeah, remember back when we were talking about the Campbell Housefield air pneumatic tools?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? So we've got, we've got that cutting wheel. On one of those tools.
Oh, okay.
So that would do it.
Okay.
Which I haven't used. I haven't done this, but depending on the blade on your compound miter saw, and depending on the material you're cutting, you can use a saw like that, or you can get abrasive cutoff wheels for a saw like that.
Right. So if you have a chop saw or a miter saw, but typically you don't have that blade on there. So if the blade's not ready, then that's going to take some time to get it set up.
Right.
But that's an option.
Okay.
Not a bad idea.
Okay. So far
I haven't used any of those tools for this job.
So what tool did you use? Did you use, tin snips?
It's possible. I don't think they would have been strong enough. It's a fairly thick metal. It's a rigid track. It's possible they could do it, but I think it would be tough with the tin snips.
Okay.
But yeah, there's another choice for cutting metal, and certainly use those for ductwork and very thin metal, sheet metal.
Yeah.
And make sure you wear your leather gloves, or you won't have any hands when you're done.
Yeah, because you get those sharp edges. Paul, you've stumped me. I've listed all the things that I might use.
I actually pulled out my jigsaw.
Your jigsaw? Did you have a metal cutting blade for your jigsaw?
Yeah, it was actually the blade on it was a metal cutting blade already. Or if I didn't have it, I would have popped one right in. I knew there was one in the box. I clamped it and it just went through it no problem. Was it our Makita, right? Is that what I have? I have the same one you have.
You've got the Bosch.
The Bosch, I'm sorry. It's a Bosch, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing is sweet.
That Bosch, what is it called? The 1587K or something?
That's pretty good if you're even close, but the Bosch jigsaw is a sweet, one of the best jigsaws I've used. So, that went through it no problem. I usually do pull out the hacksaw because the hacksaw is about as safe of a method you can use. Anytime you have something that spins or anytime you have a power tool and you're cutting metal, you really got to think about, you don't want that it either spinning the metal you're cutting or causing it to flip up with a sharp edge. You want to make sure it's clamped.
Absolutely. And you're going to have little shards of metal filings.
Yeah, that too.
And if you've ever gotten a hot filing of metal, like in your eye or something, it's a very painful thing. So safety glasses are a must.
Now let's talk about some other metals that the handy guy may come across in the house. We talked briefly about this right before we started podcasting. One of them is angle iron. If you ever have to put up a garage door opener, or there's other things that you use angle iron for around the
shop. People even build shelves out of angle iron and things like that.
So that's a lot stronger metal. It's hard to use a hacksaw on that, I think.
It is hard to use a hacksaw on that, but that would be, if you're only doing one or two cuts and you don't have a jigsaw handy, you can get through it with a hacksaw, no problem.
But what about
that jigsaw is a good idea. If you've got the right blade on there, absolutely, that'll do it.
Okay, what about something
rebar.
Like... Rebar. Oh, rebar. Yeah.
Do handy guys use rebar for anything?
Have we? Trying to remember. I've used it for around my swing set. I did some kind of a retaining wall type deals out of pressure treated wood to use it to solidify them into the ground.
Okay.
Pounded rebar down and drilled holes.
Sure. Cutting rebar is a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
So
steel. What do you use to cut that? I know, well, I've seen it done, and I can't.
Yeah, there are specialty tools made for that.
Where you want to use your acetylene, right?
No,
cutting tool.
You know, there your jigsaw may be great. You'd use an abrasive blade, a metal cutting blade on a miter saw, but there is actually a cutter made specifically for rebar. And it's a big, long bar, so you get lots of leverage, and it just kind of slices it, and that works really well.
Another product that many handy guys have had to deal with is shelving, specifically the wire shelving.
Yeah.
What do you use to cut that?
Bolt cutters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've used the hacksaw on that way back when before I had bolt cutters, and that takes forever. And once you get, I felt weird walking out of the store with these big, huge bolt cutters just to put up a shelf. But I've used them so many times since then.
Right.
And that's just the only way to go once you have that.
Yeah, you got to have bolt cutters.
Yeah, so if you're going to do wire shelving, just get the bolt cutters.
But you know, at the home center, if you have your measurements, they often will have that there ready to go.
They almost always have them there. You can cut them before you leave. That's true. I like cutting them on site just in case.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to run back for one more cut. Okay, so bolt cutters. Are any other metals that the handy guy has to cut? I'm trying to think around the house.
Yeah, I mean, you've got copper pipe.
Yeah.
That's a metal.
Then you're going to use a pipe cutter.
You're going to use a pipe cutter for that. You might have galvanized pipe, a steel pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd use a pipe cutter also for that. What else in metal? We talked about angle iron. We've talked about
rebar. So the hacksaw you definitely want to have in your tool arsenal. And then if you have a metal cutting blade for a jigsaw, and maybe
or
some bolt cutters.
Or something else.
Miter
saw or whatever.
Be very careful. Anything that spins. The other thing is if you're cutting like sheet metal or anything like that, you're drilling a hole in it or something, that can get it to spin. You always want to clamp down metal. If you're drilling a hole through metal and you get it spinning, I've known people to have lost fingers for that.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
So, all right, so there's the basics of metal cutting in the household. I'm sure if we get into in more industrial activities or car, automotive, then you may have a whole other
right. Well, let me talk to you about the acetylene for a minute. So I was actually doing some cutting of some custom brackets for a pergola that I was building.
Oh, yeah. I remember those brackets.
Right. And they were 3/16 inch steel.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very hard. You know, it'd take you an hour and three blades with a hacksaw, right?
Right.
And I had never done any cutting with torches before, and I wanted to try it. So I went out and bought one of these kits at the home center that's got your oxygen and your acetylene, and there's a proper mix, and there's a little tip and, you know, a hose that goes over to it and all of that. And started making my cut, and it was cutting. It was really wild. The problem with those kits, Paul, or the problem with cutting with acetylene is you use a fair amount of oxygen to make the acetylene burn hotter.
Sure.
Right? So there's a mix. And that oxygen runs out really quick.
Okay.
So when you're buying a little 16-ounce bottle of compressed oxygen, it's not going to last very long.
Okay.
So I was able to cut maybe, 2 inches. And then I'm out of oxygen and I was done. Right?
Sounds like a waste of time.
It was a waste of time. I ended up taking it to a metal worker because I had to make 16 of these brackets.
I need oxygen.
And and he actually welded them up and they came out beautiful. But,
all right. Cool.
So yeah, you can get those cutting torch things at the home center, but you'd probably want to have, you know, the big 100-pound bottles of oxygen and acetylene to go along with it.
All right. Up next, I want to talk about CFLs. We've talked about this many times before.
CFLs.
Yeah, I know. You're probably tired of it. But this is an issue I have going on in my home I need to think about, and I need some answers.
Okay.
And that has to do with the safety, CFLs, and children. Up next.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, here's the deal.
Yeah, okay. So you've got an issue at home with CFLs,
well,
right?
Well, not necessarily yet, but I need to think through this.
Okay.
And I'm sure our listeners out there, if they have CFLs, and more people, you know, you almost have to, I think they're going to stop selling.
CFLs are compact fluorescents,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're going to stop selling the incandescents, what, in a year and a half or a year? Who knows
they
when?
They better not.
Anyway, that's what they're saying. So
Who's they?
Who knows? In my daughter's room, she doesn't have any fixed light fixtures. She has a lamp on top of a bookshelf, maybe a 4-foot-high bookshelf, and then another one that's sitting on the windowsill. And they're both just, you know, freestanding little lamps. In one of our children's bedroom, I've taken the time to rewire it so he has a light on the ceiling. Because they all have switches for switched outlets.
Right, but one of the outlets is switched in the room, sure.
So anyway, my daughter said several days ago, I need a new light bulb, and I finally got around to going to get her one, and I've never put CFLs in these lamps because they knock them over. It's just not that high off the ground. I almost said her name. It's not that high off the ground, and my daughter just knocks things over. And I don't want to deal with a broken CFL in her room because I know they contain mercury, right?
That's what I hear, you know? And then you got the whole hazmat, deal to clean it up.
They're not
going to
do
that.
But, you know, it's supposed to be dangerous. Now, I don't know how I mean, I know mercury's not good for you, but how much is in it? I don't know. So my question is, what are my solutions? I suppose I can still find incandescents, but I have several boxes of CFLs still in the house to use.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, if they are going to be getting rid of incandescents, that's always been my fallback for kids' rooms. I felt more comfortable putting them in there. If they get broken, I'm not, other than the glass, not as worried. But should I just say, oh, well, I'm putting in the CFL, be careful.
Just train them not to break the lamps,
yeah,
right?
Do I rewire her room? Is there a CFL that's safer?
I don't know about that. I'll tell you what I did. I haven't given it as much thought as you have, but, I put in ceiling fixtures in my kids' rooms, but also as part of a ceiling fan with a light on it. And so then I put two switches on the wall instead of one. So one would turn the light on and off, and one would turn the fan with a speed control. So they can turn the fan on, and then they're not complaining that it's warm in their room or whatever. So that's what I did.
Maybe I ought to do that. But I have three kids. That's three fans.
I know.
One's already been wired for a light, but I'd have to add another. It's easy to add another wire, I guess, if I do that.
Right. So, but yeah, I like in bedrooms, I like having a center ceiling mount light. It just seems natural to have that.
Well, the reason I ended up doing that for one of my children is that he reads every night, and usually in bed, and he was always trying to had a little lamp on his bed or whatever, and some of those get really hot, and he'd leave them on, and I'd right. wonder if that was really good, and I just figured it was easier just to have an overhead lamp.
Right. And then it's easier to turn off when you're walking past the hall when he's falling asleep.
That's right.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. So, okay. So my at this point, though, I wonder, maybe our listeners can help us. I know they were talking about some CFLs that don't have mercury. I know you can buy the CFLs that are inside like a regular bulb as well. So that for those, that's the other thing. I think the lamp has the lampshade that goes over the bulb.
Right. It clips on. Right.
Yeah. I guess I could get a new lamp to fix that, but I still would have the issue of it getting broken possibly. So I'm looking for ideas. If you're a listener
we talked about LED bulbs a while back.
Yeah, that's true.
If
they're available yet. I haven't seen them yet, at least not.
You know, I'm sure you can get some LED bulbs, but they're going to be
$30 or something.
Yeah, they're probably going to be expensive, but
maybe that's what I'll have to look at.
Maybe
I would just buy the LED 30-cent incandescent. LED.
Right.
If I'm there, you know, it's going to be hard to for a room like, especially for this, where it might get broken. I'd rather have it. If I'm going to spend that kind of money, it better be up out of the way so it can't get busted easily. Anyway, so I want some help. I need some help. What are other people doing with their kids that have these lamps with little small kids? They don't want to have the mercury in there getting broken.
I don't know.
All right, well, we're going to leave it for our listeners to decide. I need some good answers to this dilemma. Do I just rewire a room and put overhead lamps? That's maybe what I'll have to do.
Yeah, I guess that's what you're going to have to do or get the LEDs. But, you know, that makes me think of another thing, and we're going to have time on this show to cover it, and that is you know, the cost effectiveness of some of these green products. I know we've talked about it in the past in relation to the CFLs.
Right.
And we came to the conclusion, yeah, they do, they will pay for themselves.
If they last near the length that they say they do, and they don't always.
Right. But you should get a payback on your electric bill.
Yep.
But there's a water saving device I came across that I'm not so sure about. So I want to talk about that if we have time on this show.
Yep, we'll do that after this.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
All right, Brian, so tell us about this water-saving idea you have.
Okay. Well, now, it's not a water-saving idea I have. You know, at the home centers and online, at our Handy Guys store even, you can buy these retrofit kits for your toilet that will convert it from a single flush, normal flush, to what they call a dual flush.
Wait, no, you got to remember, Brian, my toilet already is a water-saving toilet. It only uses 1.6 gallons, I guess.
Right, and so does mine.
Okay.
So what they're saying is if you're making a flush and you don't have solids, you can actually use half the amount of water. So there's two different levers. There's one for if you've got solids, and then there's one if you've got only liquids to go down.
Now, this is a retrofit for any toilet you can put on it?
Yes.
So it's a new flush valve.
New flush valve, and it's new, you know, handle kind of a thing. It's a different, it's a little button. You push it up, and it's one thing. You push it down.
So you got to remember, based on what you've done.
It probably says on there. I haven't installed one of these. I've just seen pictures of it.
All right.
And heard people talk about them. But it looks like a little button, and it probably says on there solids, liquids, or something like that.
Now, have you ever been to these newer buildings and arenas where they have the waterless urinals?
Right, waterless urinals. The ladies that listen to the show don't know about those, probably.
Anyway.
No water at all.
All right, but this does use, so we'll use half the water only for those times where...
Where you only need to use half the water, right.
Okay. So it's for guys?
Primarily for guys, yeah. Yeah,
If there's toilet paper, we don't know if it's going to work with half the...
Right. If there's a little bit, maybe it'll work. But if there's, you know, what little girls tend to fill up in there, it's probably not going to work. You're going to need the full flush, at least in my house.
So, So how much does this device or this fill valve cost?
It's $25.
$25?
And you're going to save half the water on those particular flushes.
All right.
Sounds like a great deal, doesn't it?
All right, let's do the math.
Well, that's what I started to do, Paul. So I said, does that really make economic sense for a household?
Right. Just looking at the economics of it, not on using up water, whether there's a shortage of water or anything like that.
Purely on the economics. So how much, on average, in the United States, does water cost? It costs $1.50 per 1,000 gallons on average. So we'll use that number. It's a nice round-ish number.
$1.50 per 1,000 gallons.
That's right.
So that would mean that would equal $0.0015 per gallon, or another way to say that is 1.5 tenths of a penny.
That's right.
Per gallon.
Per gallon.
Okay.
And your toilet uses 1.6 gallons.
Yes, roughly.
Roughly. So... how much does it cost per flush?
So we did the math, and if you multiply those together, it costs you basically 2.4 tenths of one penny.
Per flush.
Right. So in other words, four flushes would be 0.96
Call it four pennies. Flushes for a penny.
Yeah. We'll give you four flushes for a penny.
There you go.
Four for a penny, B. can double flush. Well,
right. With a 1.6 gallon toilet.
Right.
Okay. How many times do you flush your toilet a day?
Well, we went through that, and if you have a busy household and you have a bunch of kids, I could definitely see our downstairs toilet being flushed 10 times a day.
10 times a day. How many now? How many of those, we're not taking surveys. How many of those involve solids? We don't know.
We don't know.
But let's say, for sake of argument, half of them.
Okay.
So let's say you could save half of, you know, use a half a flush for half of them.
So it'd be, five flushes.
Five flushes, and you're saving...
So every day you're saving a little over a penny of water. Oh, no, because you're only saving half the water.
Right.
So it's really half a penny.
Half a penny a day.
Right. Okay.
So does it make sense to spend $25?
Well, let's figure it out. Let's save half a
penny a day
on at the water at that rate. If I'm saving on five flushes, I'm going to save. So basically, I'm saving five times 1.6 gallons. Actually, it's half of 1.6, so right. It's going to be 0.8 gallons.
Right.
And so let's figure this out. So
okay.
five flushes.
Yeah.
Times 0.8 gallons, right? That's what I'm saving.
Correct.
All right. So the math.
Which costs, we figured whatever yeah. that.
Right. So let's get.
Two-tenths of a.
Get this thing out of here. So it's going to be, all right. So five flushes.
Paul's got his spreadsheet up here, folks. Let him ding, ding, okay. ding, ding.
So he enters it. Let's in. Just put it, do it another way. So then the cost for that, those flushes I'm saving, I'm going to save half of 2.4 cents. Which is 0.0012 is what I'm going to save times five flushes a day
mm-hmm.
times, we'll say, 365 days a year.
Right.
So we'll figure out what our savings is per year, right?
Yep.
So that's...
that number times the times five times 365.
So we basically took... Oops, what did I do?
You've got an error in your formula.
Ooh, no good. What did I do? Oh, no, that's right. 15 times that, 15. $2.19 a year.
$2.19 a year.
We will save $2.19 a year. And you said the product costs how much?
$25. I mean, there's different prices, right? It might be more expensive at one place versus another. I think it was $22.99 in our Amazon store, and it was $26 at the home center. But call it 25.
Okay. So basically, you'd have to use this product for about 11.4 years before you recoup the cost of the product.
Yeah.
Assuming, actually, no fill valves usually last that long. So you're not going to save any money.
No.
But there, it may make sense for some people to get it.
You know, I Googled those water-saving flush valve things, right? And they're all... touted, you know, save thousands of gallons of water a year, right? Well, even if you saved thousands of gallons of water a year at $1.50 per thousand gallons, you're thousands, call it three, you're saving, you know, $4.50. So if you're really saving thousands of gallons a year.
If it's going to be a hard sell, because it's not a hard sell.
These things are flying off the shelves.
Really? Well, you know, if you're in the Southwest or other areas, if everyone had these, they probably aren't going to make them a requirement. Then in those areas, I don't know how much water costs, but I know that there certainly isn't an abundance of it.
That's right. I mean, we're lucky we live in an area where we rarely have water restrictions because, you know, we've got a lot of rivers and we get rainfall. And
now they're a lot better about retaining the water in the ground with the runoff basins and things like that. So.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got areas, Pacific Northwest and other areas where you don't, you know, you don't have those kind of issues. You get glacier runoff up in some of those areas. So not everyone needs to worry about,
But it doesn't, it's not going to make me run out and get one of these just to install it.
No.
Either.
No.
Unless I feel like I'm doing something. I don't know what good I'm doing there.
Right.
I'll assume I'm not saving any money because, well, some fill valves will last that long, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
check our video on fixing a fill valve. It's out there somewhere.
Now, that other fill valve we talked about on a previous show, the one that if you've got a leaky flapper that will cause it to not fill up until, you know what I mean? Like to keep it prevents the toilet from running.
Yeah, that I think that idea is pretty cool. Fill valve.
Right.
That if you have a slow leak in your flapper, it doesn't just keep filling and filling and filling.
Right. What happens is the tank drains out.
Right.
And then, that's a pain in the butt. You've got to actually hit the lever to cause it to fill up, so then you can flush it.
But if water's expensive, I would want one of those.
Right, but that also tells you that you've got a leaky flapper.
Right.
You know something's wrong.
Yeah,
then
you can buy those at the home center. So that's a pretty nice feature.
And they're a little less expensive. They're about $18, as I recall.
That makes sense, especially if water's expensive, because you could have that thing leak. You could get a big bill if it goes long enough.
Now, let's look at this another way. If you've got to replace your fill valve.
Right. Does it make sense?
Does it make sense?
How much does a fill valve cost?
Well, you can get the basic Fluid Master one for about $10.
Okay.
You can get the Fluid Master Water Saver one for about $18. Or you get one of these for about $25.
So then
two and a half times the cost.
So then it makes a little bit more economic sense, possibly.
Possibly. If you're buying one anyway.
Okay. So there you have it, but there's the numbers.
Yeah, there are the numbers. Don't run out and buy one unless you need to put a new valve in anyway, then consider it.
All right, so there you go. There you got some plumbing, some metal cutting, and some CFLs. I still am looking for an answer to my question, though.
Okay.
All right, that's all we got for this week.
Thanks, bye.
See ya.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.